Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls Media Roundtable. Later in the show, we'll discuss a new investigation by The Lever, exposing how the Trump administration has hired a team of private debt collectors to hound immigrants slapped with new multi-million dollar civil penalties for not leaving the United States. First, we begin with a ProPublica frontline investigation and documentary exposing how the administration has quietly targeted and arrested hundreds of anti-ICE raid activists and protesters. Today's guest, A.C. Thompson, and his colleagues at ProPublica and Frontline found that over the past 10 months, the Trump administration has arrested people who publicly oppose ICE's operations, routinely accusing dissenters of being domestic terrorists or extremists. Federal agents have arrested hundreds of U.S. citizens, including protesters, activists observing the immigration enforcement operations, bystanders, and in some cases, the family members of people targeted for deportations. Here is the trailer for the Frontline ProPublica documentary, Caught in the Crackdown.
Trump has promised to conduct what he calls the largest deportation program in American history.
We will begin the process of returning millions and millions of criminal aliens back to the places from which they came.
In collaboration with ProPublica,
Bobbino was deployed to several cities.
He was the one who was the tip of the spear for this new type of immigration enforcement across the country.
When we talk about who they're arresting and who they're holding accountable, it's not the worst of the worst.
From Los Angeles,
hundreds of National Guard troops,
to Chicago,
Operation Midway Blitz,
to Minneapolis,
the White House today doubling down.
The pushback on protest,
trying to terrify people and try to scare people away.
Border Patrol agents, they don't wake up in the morning and say, let me see who I can hurt today.
And the fallout.
President Trump and I, along with others in the administration, have recognized that certain improvements could and should be made.
Now on Frontline, Caught in the Crackdown.
A.C. Thompson is the correspondent for the ProPublica frontline documentary, Caught in the Crackdown. The film is available to stream on YouTube, the PBS app, and Frontline's website. A.C. Thompson is an investigative reporter with ProPublica and a correspondent for the PBS series Frontline. A.C. Thompson has covered the rise of extremism in this country for more than a decade. Hi, A.C., thank you to you and your colleagues for another great and important documentary, and thank you so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you. I want to begin by talking about the end of the documentary and get an update on what's happening today, because the coverage has really slowed down over the past couple of months of what's going on with ICE. So as you report, in cities across the country, countless people have been injured, some even killed, by officers using tactics that experts say violate their own rules. By February, amid rising opposition around the country, the Trump administration began backing off of its campaign, and the man at the center of it all, Greg Bovino, was out. So, AC, can you give us an update? What is happening across the country when it comes to ICE raids and deportations that might not be getting the media attention we saw when everything was just blowing up and so violent?
Right. So I would say a way to think about it is like this. If you go back to June of last year, when we started seeing these really high profile, high intensity immigration sweeps around the country that were led by the Border Patrol and not ICE, and they were led by then Border Patrol Chief Greg Bovino, you sort of had one faction within the Homeland Security structure, and that was Bovino and his Border Patrol agents who were really driving this aggressive approach. And I think you had another faction within Homeland Security that was represented by Border Czar Tom Homan and the person that actually runs Customs and Border Protection, Rodney Scott, that wanted to take a more, slightly more subtle approach, more targeted approach. And I would say the other person who was supportive of Bovino's approach and that really aggressive approach was then Homeland Secretary Kristi Noem. Well, now Greg Bovino and Secretary Noem are out, and the sort of people who are pushing this less aggressive, more sort of stealthy approach are in power. And they're sort of taking this stance that we don't want to be so combative We don't want to be so in your face with people. We want to be, you know, more effective and less confrontational. So the number of immigration arrests and deportations has slowed somewhat, but they're still going on. And it's really just sort of happening in a manner that's more like what we've seen in the past. And I would expect those numbers to start ratcheting up again in the near future as more and more ICE agents and officers come online and start driving this mass deportation effort. Really what we saw was a departure from typical immigration enforcement, with the Border Patrol taking the lead in these really violent, aggressive, roving sort of arrest all the brown people sweeps in the interior of the country, which is something that we really had not seen for decades.
You know, LA Taco does an amazing job of covering what is happening on the streets day after day. And 2 days ago, they had their latest update. They're reporting that there's a push for a, quote, quieter immigration raid, but there's an increasing use of force at detention centers.
Yeah, the thing that everyone that studies immigration detention, and I'm not one of those people, I'm not an expert on this, but what everyone is saying is, look, we're seeing generally larger numbers of people in detention. We're seeing two types of detention. So we're seeing people being detained here in the U.S. in a variety of different facilities. And then we're also seeing people move to prisons in third-party countries and being detained and imprisoned in those places. But there are ongoing concerns about medical attention within the U.S. facilities, about abuse within the facilities, about people dying in those facilities, and you know, just general human rights concerns. Those concerns, I would say, are ratcheted up when you start looking at the third party facilities that are abroad, where people you know, may have served a prison sentence in the US, may their immigration papers may be out of order, and then they're sent to a third country where they've never been and imprisoned there, whether it's El Salvador or another country, and often subjected to torture and massive abuse.
And I think it's so important, as you ended the documentary, AC, you said that for the people who have been arrested, targeted, that the trauma is long-lasting. And I think it's so important to remember that, I mean, these are human beings we're talking about. And Congresswoman Adelita Grijalva from Arizona was on Democracy Now! This morning. She visited two ICE jails recently, and she said the detainees described horrific conditions. She said people are losing weight. The water is undrinkable. There's no rhyme or reason as to what's going on. A new investigation by The Guardian found that during the first 7 months of last year, immigration agents arrested the parents of at least 27,000 children, including thousands of U.S. citizens. So there's that. And then Politico had a piece last month by Samuel Benson called "Trump's MAGA Allies Have a New Plan for Mass Deportations. It Could Splinter the Coalition." Samuel reports a group of Trump's MAGA allies released a playbook called Mass Deportation Coalition, and it's an organization led by prominent Trump veterans. A major immigration enforcement crackdown on workplaces is in the works. Someone who shared this with Politico said there's no chance for a mass deportation program if work site enforcement is not the centerpiece. So they've got plans here. They say that they're going to continue with this. So can you give us a sense of, you know, how can we find out what is to come? And then obviously politics plays a huge role in this. What role will the midterms play in their decision making?
Yeah, you know, I think on the first question, there's so much good reporting by journalists, by activists, by investigators who are really looking at immigration as more than the sort of policy issue that we've looked at it as in the past, but as a basic human rights issue, as a policing issue, as a prisons issue. And I think there's a ton of good reporting coming out on that, and good investigations by everyone from Human Rights Watch to all the sources you just named. So really just keeping your eyes open as the news comes in and being tuned into it, you can follow a lot of this information as it breaks. And I would say there's also a fair amount of leaking going on with this administration. So plans have not been that well kept in terms of secrecy. You know, on the political side, it's really hard for me to gauge like what matters and what doesn't. I think, you know, what we saw in the winter in Minneapolis is that eventually killing U.S. citizens in the streets did not go over very well. And we'd had months and months and months of federal agents shooting people, firing less lethal weapons, tear gas, pepper spray, rubber bullets at people, making very violent arrests, and engaging in really unvarnished racial profiling. But I think when we got to a point in Minnesota where we had two U.S. citizens, activists killed in about 2 weeks, that really sent a message across the country that transcended sort of political lines, that people were not happy with this type of hybrid immigration enforcement and policing. And I really think that's why things turned at that moment. How this plays out going forward, not clear to me.
AC, watching this documentary made me think that in other times, the killing of Ray Good and Alex Pretty, and we might be still talking about it. We might be talking about why an officer has not been held accountable. But in today's times, with the media coming at us so quickly, it's just there's so much has happened since then. So I want to play this clip because I think it's so important to revisit this. And I'd love to find out from you, what about accountability? Where is this officer today? So we're going to play a clip from the Frontline ProPublica documentary, Caught in the Crackdown. And you are going to hear Renee Good, who was shot and killed by an ICE agent. And so many people have talked about what she said, her last words to him. That's fine, dude. I'm not mad at you. Here's that clip.
Go home to Texas, ass.
January 7th, 2026. A month into the Trump administration's crackdown on illegal immigration in Minneapolis, federal officers approached an activist named Renee Good as she sat in her car.
That's fine, dude. I'm not mad at you.
You want to come at us? I say go get yourself some lunch, big boy. Go ahead.
Out of the car. Get out of the car.
No! No! Shame! Shame! Oh my God! What the What the You just What the did you do?
The killing of Renee Good by ICE officer Jonathan Ross stunned the country.
What did you do?
You! Shame! 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 Shame!
We are following a breaking news situation in South Minneapolis, a shooting involving ICE agents.
We have just learned the victim's name. She is a 37-year-old woman, and her name is Renee Nicole Good. She was shot and killed today, and ICE claims that the agent opened fire after Good, quote, weaponized her vehicle in an attempt to kill a federal officer.
In the days afterwards, I spoke to eyewitnesses and visited the site where Good was killed.
Mother of three, a partner, and a poet, 37-year-old Renee Nicole Good, as described by those who knew her. Her neighbors now mourning their loss.
That is a clip from the Frontline ProPublica documentary, Caught in the Crackdown. AC Thompson is the voice that you heard there. He's the correspondent for this documentary. AC, after this happened, a lot of people were also talking about the fact that that ICE agent, Jonathan Ross, also called Renee Good an effing bee moments before she died in her car. How is it there have not been any consequences for the killing and shooting of Renee Good by Jonathan Ross?
That's a great question. I think the first thing I should do is sort of lay out the scene here. You know, the sweep of policing in America is that because of public pressure, because of policymakers, because of media, because of activists, policing has generally become more responsive, more transparent, less dangerous, and generally safer. And that's because people have been fed up with their community members being abused and killed by law enforcement. So if you were to compare policing generally today to 20 years ago, there's tons of problems, there's tons of issues, but you are generally in most cities and states going to get more modern, more transparent, more humane policing. What we've seen with the federal agencies is the exact opposite. We've seen just a total disregard for the norms of modern policing, of how you use force, of how you treat people, of how you safely respond to a potentially dangerous situation. And that's what we saw play out over and over and over again in U.S. cities with these immigration agents, is things that would not be okay with a big city police department or a state police department, that they would say, what are you guys doing? This is not how we do it. This is a violation of our guidelines. With the agents who have killed people like Renee Good, like Alex Preti, we should be thinking about the accountability mechanisms going in a couple different directions. And the first one is there's the criminal accountability piece that typically goes through the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, which has built a lot of expertise in prosecuting law enforcement agents who engage in criminal conduct. The problem with that is that that division of the Justice Department has been basically systematically dismantled by the Trump administration. The veteran prosecutors and attorneys there who did their best to hold law enforcement accountable have generally fled or been removed. And the place is a shell of itself and has really not committed to actually doing the hard work of holding law enforcement accountable when they engage in misconduct. So that's one big problem that you have, is that we can't necessarily rely on the Department of Justice to bring criminal charges in these cases if they're warranted. The second piece is the other piece of accountability that typically happens goes through the internal affairs agencies for the internal affairs offices for these agencies, right? And those investigations tend to be tabled. They tend to be stalled until the criminal piece plays out. So as long as we're waiting for the Department of Justice to decide whether they're going to criminally prosecute people, we should not expect to see any internal affairs investigations moving forward and people being disciplined in that way or losing their jobs in that way, because the investigations are effectively, stalled.
And when it comes to Jonathan Ross, Tom Latcham with the Daily Beast launched a newsletter called Punch Up. And on April 27th, he reported that Jonathan Ross, the agent who fatally shot unarmed mom Renee Good, has quietly relocated and has been allowed to resume working in another state. Senior Department of Homeland Security officials have told Punch Up that Agent Jonathan Ross has effectively been shielded from ICE's own accountability process because an FBI investigation has stalled. What are your thoughts on this, AC?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Is, you know, also these things don't have to happen like that. You know, these investigations can play out in a parallel way. It's just a matter of whether the government wants them to do so. You can have the internal investigation going on and the criminal investigation going on simultaneously. And that is the preferred way to do things, according to many experts. So somebody like Jonathan Ross could be put on basically desk duty, could be put on, basically leave and potentially be removed from their job for policy violations while the whole criminal investigation, which is another standard, is playing out.
You did not get an interview with Greg Bovino, who was the head of Border Patrol during all of this violence, but you have this incredible footage of him talking to these ICE agents who look like they're ready for war. And he's basically saying, if anybody touches you, arrest them. Can you talk about the tone that he set that allowed so much of this to happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. With Greg Bovino, one of the things that we show in the film that you're talking about is this body cam footage where he's getting his agent psyched up to deal with a crowd that is hostile, that's loud, that's rambunctious. And he's saying, go arrest anyone that touches you. Whatever you do, it needs to be legal, ethical, moral. And we're going to bring in a lot of less lethal weapons, tear gas, et cetera, to deal with these people. But what he doesn't say is, here are the basic use of force guidelines for our agency. Here's where you can use force, and here's where you can't. Here's what we're going to do in terms of giving people an order to disperse, giving them time to disperse, and then moving forward. He doesn't do any of the nuts and bolts of actual modern policing and telling his agents what they can do. He just sort of speaks in these platitudes and gets people hyped up, and then bad stuff happens. That is something you can totally expect when you are not giving specific information to your agents and you're treating it more like a rally than a policing action.
And did I hear this correctly? It was hard to hear exactly, but one of the ICE agents, when he was doing that, the ICE agent said, "Whose country is this?" And Bovino said, "It's our country." Did I hear that right?
He says, "Whose city is this?"
Oh, whose
and
city?
They're in Los Angeles County. Yeah. And he says, "Whose city is this?" And then Bovino says, "It's our city," mm-hmm. Which is funny because he doesn't live there. He ran a border patrol sector down in the Imperial Valley, far from Los Angeles. That's not his city.
And also, AC, you and your team did a really good job of finding some of the protesters who were arrested. You report that you analyzed arrests of more than 300 arrests and bystanders who were caught in the crackdown. And over again, many of these cases fell apart, contradicted by video evidence and witness testimony. This was also really an interesting part of the documentary Caught in the Crackdown. So you found a lot of people who were arrested and you asked them to show you the video that they have or their friends have of what happened. And it's just so fascinating to think that, we have such an important conversation about privacy, given that everybody has an iPhone and there are cameras all over the place. But in this case, that iPhone video is really ensuring that the truth is being told. So can you talk about how this footage recorded by protesters and bystanders is really changing what is happening just across the board in the courtroom?
Yeah, it's been shocking. I mean, I think the thing that you typically see with a decent law enforcement agency that's skilled in making street arrests is the things that they're going to say are not going to vary that dramatically from what comes out on video. There may be some variance, but it's different than what we saw with the Border Patrol and ICE, where over and over again, the federal agents would go to court and they'd say, "This thing happened, this person assaulted me, they attacked me, they did this and that. They were driving erratically, they tried to drive us off the road." And then the defendant would say, "Well, here's the video of everything that happened. Check this out." And the courts would say, oh, what we've been told by these federal agents does not seem to be true. And prosecutors over and over again, to their credit, would say, "We're dismissing this case. Like, we can't stand behind these claims these federal agents are making." So it's been a real eye-opener to see that happen. And like I said, it happens in local and state policing, for sure, but not at this kind of scale that we've been seeing with the federal agents.
Given that you have been reporting on these anti-ICE protests for months now, how much have you relied on this kind of phone footage for your reporting?
We were out there filming for months and months, so we gathered a lot of their own our own footage and tried to use that. But also, yeah, we were absolutely turning to social media. We were turning to the footage that people were gathering in the streets, non-professional people, activists, individuals, community members. And we were also turning to other journalists that we know and say, "Hey, we were at this incident. Do you have another angle of this? Because this is what we saw. What do you have in your camera?"
And can you also give us a sense, given that you have reported on extremist right-wingers for so many years, AC, what is the status of some of these extremists? What are they talking about right now, given that, you know, some people are angry, some MAGA people are angry at Trump for a variety of reasons? What are you hearing from these guys that you've been reporting on for so long?
You know, a lot of them were really hyped up about getting their members to join ICE, to join the Border Patrol. There was a lot of hype around that. There was a lot of excitement about that. There was a lot of excitement about this really in-your-face approach to mass deportations led by Greg Bovino of the Border Patrol. You know, when he was pushed out, there was also a bunch of backlash and a sense that, oh, the Trump administration is walking away from this tough approach and we need to push them back to taking a violent, aggressive approach.
And then the final question, AC, and I think this is so important because the Trump administration constantly said it's going after the worst of the worst. And you could argue that one of the reasons why he won the popular vote this time is because of what he promised to do around immigration. I mean, at the GOP convention, so many attendees were holding those signs saying mass deportations now. A lot of people in this country really wanted him to deport the, quote, worst of the worst. But can you just tell us, based on the interviews that you've done for this documentary and then your reporting, what do the numbers say about who's actually being arrested and deported?
You know, I should really go to the, you know, our reporting on the ground. We followed the Border Patrol agents around for days and days and days, and we watched them make one arrest after another. And what was very, very clear is that they didn't have a plan, that they didn't have a target list, that what they were doing was driving around in convoys of SUVs. And when they saw people of color or they saw people working at blue collar job sites doing landscaping or construction work, they got out of their vehicles and started arresting people. That's what happened. It was an exercise in raw racial profiling and raw class profiling. This notion that like we're getting the worst of the worst, it's just garbage. It's just bunk. It's not true in any meaningful way. What's true is that when we'd be following the Border Patrol around, they would drive through a strip mall parking lot and the first person of color that they would see would end up in their vehicle. That's what would happen. Or we would drive around the suburbs of Chicago and every time they saw somebody working in a yard, they would stop and start questioning them. That's actually what happened.
Wow. And the latest numbers I could find, I'm sure there are more, but in February of this year, CBS reported that less than 14% of nearly 400,000 immigrants arrested by ICE had charges or convictions for violent criminal offenses. Less than 14%. AC, it seems that every time the media talk about this, this number should be included just to let people know who is being arrested here.
You know, I would say to the credit of the media, a lot of the reporting that I've seen in different cities where I've been working has been good about looking at those numbers and saying, well, hey, how many of these people actually really did have criminal histories? So I think I've seen a lot of good reporting on that. Could be more. I would say the alternative is when I would go to these press conferences held by DHS, they would have like a slide deck full of people who'd done horrible things that they had arrested. But what they never really did was provide numbers. You know, we arrested X number of people. This is how many of them had criminal histories. This is how those break down. You know, they didn't do that. It was all sort of anecdote. Like, here's a picture of some person looking terrible who supposedly did something awful.
Right. You know? And they also put those up on social media. And they got a lot of traction. AC, is there anything else you'd like to share with us that you think deserves more attention, given that ICE arrests are just not getting the media attention they did months ago?
You know, I think a thing that I want to be clear about is to us, like, we've seen this as a hybrid new form of policing involving the military, involving law enforcement, involving immigration enforcement, and that the ways that this hybrid force is acting, it should be a concern on constitutional grounds to everyone. that that should transcend our sort of concern about this being an immigration issue, that everyone's First Amendment rights are jeopardized by what we've seen in recent months, their Fourth Amendment rights, their privacy rights, all of this, that we should be seeing these in broad constitutional terms and really be thinking about what it means to have this kind of new form of policing happening in our country.
And yesterday on All Things Considered, there was a piece about ICE giving local police big money to help with immigration enforcement. So AC, we would love to have you back on the show to talk about those bigger pictures, about what this means, and then what does the future hold? Is there a way to unravel this, and what would that look like? AC Thompson is correspondent for the ProPublica Frontline documentary, Caught in the Crackdown. You can watch it on YouTube, the PBS app, or on Frontline's website. AC Thompson is an investigative reporter with ProPublica and a correspondent for Frontline. AC, huge thanks to you and your team for this documentary, and thanks so much for joining us again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up after a break on our media roundtable, we'll discuss another investigation, this one by The Lever, revealing how the Trump administration has quietly hired private debt collectors to hound immigrants slapped with multi-million dollar civil penalties for not leaving the country. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.